We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That it will expand the National Basketball Association by 4. The first 2 teams will be Charlotte, North Carolina, and Miami.
You're listening to Buzz Beat Radio, your premier Charlotte Hornets show.
All right, guys, welcome into episode 80 of Buzz Beat. We are back after a 2-week break for Thanksgiving. In our absence, I wish we almost did a podcast last week because Kemba dropped 103 points in a 2-game span. I was actually at one of those games against the Philadelphia 76ers. Heartbreaking loss with a last-second shot by Jimmy Butler. We've had multiple games that we've missed over this 2-week span in which the Hornets have just unsurprisingly struggled in the clutch. We're going to recap a couple of games this week, both games against the Hawks, the embarrassing loss that we had against them on Sunday at State Farm Arena, and then in the middle of that, there was Wednesday's victory in Charlotte over the Milwaukee Bucks. That was on Monday. So, but before we jump in, let's check in with Brian Geisinger. Spencer actually is moving this week, so I'm sure he is completely occupied with that right now. But Brian, how was your Thanksgiving last week?
Well, it was good, and thank you for asking, Richie. I really appreciate that. And first off, a welcome back to the state of North Carolina for Mr. Spencer Percy, too, right? He is once again a denizen of the Tar Heel state here in North Carolina, which is exciting. He's very close to your neck of the woods down there. So that is cool. And when I'm in the area, I'll have to come. I'll hang out for the first time ever, maybe get a beer or something like that, hang out in person, that is. But no, Thanksgiving was good. It's been a little hectic. Like during basketball season, I sort of like to have a routine of watching the ACC, covering Duke State games, watching all the Hornets games, and then obviously paying attention to the national NBA scene too. And the weekend prior to Thanksgiving, I was in Asheville for a wedding, which was a great time. But that going from that right into Thanksgiving just had me all out of rhythm. I'm watching, you know, DVR and games on my mom's TV back in Winston-Salem, which I love you, Mom. Thank you for that. It was effective, but just not like my normal sort of like basketball consuming habits. So it oddly feels good to be back sort of like in a routine. And this week, basically since I got back Sunday night and started watching the Hornets-Hawks game on tape, I've been sort of in a just immersing myself fully once again into hoops, which has been nice.
Yeah, the problem with watching games on DVR, it feels like they kind of, I mean, they already do bleed together, but when you watch it on DVR, you have like no concept of when they actually took place.
Yeah.
Quick question before we begin. If you had to choose your favorite Thanksgiving dish, what would it be? Is it the turkey or is it something else?
This is actually an easy one for me. It's, I guess, dressing or stuffing.
Yep.
Depends on like how you want to, like, it depends on where you're from or I guess how you prepare it or whatever, with how you want to define it. But no, I'm going to go, my mom makes really good stuffing. I actually helped her this year, chopped up a bunch of the vegetables and the apple for it. So that's my favorite. That's number one on my big board of Thanksgiving power rankings. Mashed potatoes are a strong second. And then honestly, after that, like, turkey's probably third, but but I think it's there's a gap. The gap between 2 and 3 is bigger than 1 and 2.
Right. It's like the Hornets team. You know what I mean? There's a big gap.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, Kemba is the dressing. I guess Jeremy Lamb is the mashed potatoes. At least for this day, he is.
And Cody Zeller's the turkey.
Yeah, and Frank is the cranberry sauce too. He's like it's like, can we just renounce its rights? We don't need cranberry sauce at Thanksgiving next year. Apologies to fans of Frank Kaminsky or cranberry sauce, but I'm fine without either of them.
No, so. I would totally agree. I didn't like it as a kid, but stuffing, dressing, whatever you want to call it, is definitely my favorite Thanksgiving dish. Let's hop right into the games. I'm just going to recap with just a little bit of a rundown of while we were gone. We're just going to recap the three most recent games. There's no point in going back to the 60-point game against the Sixers, even though it would be awesome to talk about Kemba. Anyway, so while we're gone, over the 2-week break, Hornets have lost to the Sixers, Thunder, and Hawks, and then have picked up wins over the struggling Celtics, the Pacers, the Bucks, and then we got revenge on the Hawks on Wednesday. So currently, Charlotte has a record of 11-10. So let's jump in right to the Sunday game, the loss at Atlanta. So the Hornets lost 123-124 to the Hawks. At one point in this game, the team had a 13-point lead, but the Hawks outscored Charlotte by 12 in the final three quarters. The leading scorer for Charlotte was Malik Monk with 26 points, and Marvin Williams also contributed with 20 points and 13 rebounds, which I was kind of surprised when I saw that in the box score. But so just kind of talking about the positives here, Brian, and we'll kind of transition maybe to the negatives later on. There wasn't a lot of positives because this is not a team that you should be losing to. You know, there was both teams were coming in, I think, on a one game's rest, so there was no disadvantage in our area. But the one positive I thought was Malik Monk's play. He was coming off a game, I believe it was the Thunder, where he sat out, you know, DNPCD. Mm-hmm. And for a player to come in the next game after not suiting up, I know that Monk has this high confidence, but still, I feel like that would shake your confidence a little bit. But he comes out, puts up a great performance. Shoots 60% from the field and 63% from deep. But the one thing that I noticed in this game about his play is not necessarily the points that he put up, but it's the way that he scored. If you look at, you know, the points that he scored, I just kind of went back through all of them through the NBA.com and kind of look at their field goals. A lot of them, if not all of them, were catch and shoots. And that's kind of what we want out of his game, because we've talked about this in the past where he dribbles a little bit too much and settles for a pull-up shot where it typically doesn't go in. So I think Malik Monk's play was probably the top positive that I can point to in this kind of embarrassing loss to the Hawks. What are your thoughts on any kind of positives to take from this game?
Yeah, I'll just piggyback off you with Malik Monk, but ties a career high with 26 points. That's always good. Hit 7 three-pointers, all of which, like you said, I can confirm that they were all off the catch. That's sort of what I've always thought this guy's best skill is. And I know he has plenty of abilities offensively, but if you were to pick highlight his best thing, you know, Cody's best skill is screen setting, Kemba's pull-up shooting, Malik shooting off the catch. And, he's a microwave scorer, as Spencer likes to call him, and he got hot in this game. I also thought this was a little promising too. In 8 minutes that Monk played with Kemba, Marvin, and Cody Zeller, they go +8, 4 of 8 shooting, or pardon me, +5 in 8 minutes, 4 of 8 on threes, 53% effective shooting, close to 1.2 points per possession in 8 minutes with those guys. So I thought that was good. Malik playing with Kemba and the starting front court of Marvin and Cody was good. And speaking of Marvin, this was sort of a game that kind of got him going. I mean, we've talked plenty about Marvin struggles this year, and I think even on the last episode we fielded a question on, hey, should we move Marvin to the bench, or should the Hornets move Marvin to the bench, whatever. And I thought this game, I thought he wasn't going to shoot under 30% on wide open catch and shoot threes all season. He just wasn't going to. Last three games for Marvin Williams, 8 of 17 on catch and shoot threes, 6 of 13 on 3-point attempts from above the break. And 5 of 9 on wide open catch and shoot, five of nine on 3-point attempts, the last three games. And that started with the loss that the Hornets had in Atlanta. Also, just quick other, I guess, you know, other side note too. I thought Trae Young was really impressive in this game for Atlanta. I know he didn't have an amazing shooting performance. He was just 6-18 from the field, 4-10 on threes, only 5 assists and 5 turnovers, but he threw a couple just wicked passes in this game. Not much of a defender yet. But yeah, I would say those were, if I were to sort of like, you know, pick the sort of the most obvious positives, because Kemba really didn't have it going. You know, Kemba 0-5 at the rim, 0-4 in the paint, non-restricted area. He did hit 4-9 from above the break threes, but you know, this was a high usage game for Kemba. 23 shots, just 22 points. Like, that's not the efficiency that we're used to. So, but yeah, I would say, so anyways, I think the biggest positives were Marvin and Malik, especially with their 3-point shooting in this game. The Hornets got up 45 threes. Like, that's a lot. They made 18, which is a good number. They took 28 free throws. I mean, this like was a good offensive game for the most part. It's just the defense, especially on that, you know, in the crunch time, trying to guard Bazemore with no MKG, and that came back to bite him.
Yeah. And I was never someone that wanted to bench Marvin, because I always felt like, well, first off, like we said, he was never just strictly in there for his shooting. There was a lot of other things that he provided on both ends of the court. But, you know, we kind of figured that his number would jump back up. We don't ever think it's going to maybe be where it was last season. But, you know, the last several games, he's been definitely hitting them in from deep. So I guess a couple of negatives to talk about. You kind of touched upon it. Just crunch time play in general. But, you know, Atlanta's 3-point offense, you know, their profile is very much of a modern day NBA team. I feel like they're top 5 in both getting to the rim and frequency from behind the arc. But one thing that they've struggled with this year is actually shooting well from deep. But they shot a great clip against us, 41% from deep, well above their average. And I don't know if this is like an anomaly or if it's a combination of poor defensive play or just kind of a combination of both. But I feel like the Hornets, you know, the past several seasons, I don't know what you would attribute to. I have an idea. Why do you think that these teams just come out and shoot so well against us from behind the arc when Atlanta doesn't shoot this well in general when it comes to this season? My personal thought is, and maybe this isn't the correct way to think about it, but I just think that our on-ball defense sometimes isn't the greatest. So they're able to get into the lane, and then we're having to scramble, and we're a team, especially last year, that likes to overhelp. So we're always trailing and scrambling and trying to find where the ball is. So that's kind of what I attribute it to. I don't know if it's some kind of anomaly with Atlanta's 3-point offense, or is there something that you can actually point to?
Yeah, and just real quickly too, Atlanta, this was an avalanche at the rim for them. Atlanta goes 26 of 35 shooting inside the restricted area in this game. That's 74%. The Hornets were just 9 of 21, 43%. Not good. Trae Young, John Collins pick and roll was really good for the Hawks in this game. And the first two games against the Hawks this season, Atlanta was 71 field goal attempts at the rim, which is, again, that's a ton in the Hawks. They're emphasizing it this year in Atlanta with Lloyd Pierce and Trae Young, all the new regime there. But that was way down in the game, the Wednesday night win for Charlotte. We can talk more about that in a few minutes here. As far as 3-point defense goes, I mean, if we're going to track back a couple of years, I would say part of it has been, like, some of it is health related. Guys have been hurt. You know, Cody Zeller's been out. And when that happens, the defense is less good. And I would also say, too, the Hornets are switching more this year, but they're not like a switch happy team. You know what I mean? And in years past, they were they really never really relied on that mode of defense at all. And that's sort of like the best way, right, of like stopping three. It's one of the better ways to like stop 3-point shooters, you know? I mean, You can help and recover and close out like maniacs and run dudes off the line and stuff. But, I mean, you know, teams like the Rockets and the Warriors, like especially Houston, why they were so dead set on becoming a switch crazy team last season, especially, was so they could stop Curry. Like, that whole defense was geared towards stopping him and Klay Thompson, and that's why they were cool with having Clint Capella switch out. And, hey, even if Curry crosses you up and gets a finger roll or whatever, like, we'll live with that than him, you know, hitting 50% of his threes and, you know, Oracle catching fire and stuff like that. So I would say that's part of it too. And then just like the lack of, you know, look, MKG is a very good perimeter defender, and they've had, and, you know, last year they had Carter Williams, good perimeter defender, but, you know, those guys don't play the whole game, and you're playing a lot of Nick Batum, who is not a great defender and is awful on closeouts, and Kemba tries, but he's, you know, he's at best, he's, like a break even defender, maybe not a minus defender, but sort of break even. And he's just small. And they've also been playing guys like Frank Kaminsky at the four. Like, you know, like you're just going to leave open spaces out there when you're doing some of that sort of stuff. So anyways, I think, you know, I think the personnel is a little bit better this year, I guess, but because they're switching more and Cody's been healthy, knock on wood. But you're still getting a lot of Kemba, a lot of Jeremy Lamb, a lot of Nick Batum. You know, Miles Bridges is the best athlete on this team, but he struggles in space. He loses his guy. So just really like a lack of plus wing defenders would probably be the sort of like baseline, most generic response I would have to that.
I feel like that's kind of what I narrow it down to, too.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of focusing on the perimeter defense because that leads to us scrambling a lot. We're going to transition to the Bucks game, but just the unless you have any final thoughts on this Hawks game, I will say, kind of to piggyback on your idea about the crunch time defense, but the crunch time offense was also poor. Again, it's an over-reliance on Kemba. I don't know if it's like, you know, a Kemba thing where like he wants to take the last shot, or Borrego just says, okay, everyone clear out, let Kemba go after it. It's catch 22 because Kemba is our best option, but you also want to get the defense moving as well. There was a time, you know, as poorly as we played, we had a chance to win this game. There was a step back shot with Kemba over Collins with 47 seconds left to give the Hornets the lead. I think they got a stop on the next possession. They had the lead. They had an opportunity to make the lead a little bit bigger, but there was a mess of a possession on the next possession for the Hornets that ended in a shot clock violation where there was no shot that got up. And then the last play of the game, clear out situation, like we see so often where people just spread out. Kemba takes it one-on-one, 5 seconds left. I know there wasn't a lot of time to get something done, but 5 seconds is longer than you would think. But it was funny, when I watched that last-second shot, obviously it was a clear-out situation, but Herter left Batum to double Kemba with 3 seconds left. Like, it's not like one of those things where he left him with 1 second left, knowing that he didn't have to get back to Batum in time. He left with 3 seconds left. Trying to stop that double, and Kemba complained for a foul, missed it, got blocked, whatever you want to call it, and we lost to the Hawks. Any final thoughts on crunch time offense or anything else for this game?
Yeah, just real quickly, like they probably missed Tony Parker in the clutch minutes in this game. This was the last game before he came back. I believe Devontae Graham soaked up most of the backup point guard minutes. Kemba actually shot all right in crunch minutes, 3 of 6 shooting. Hornets actually hit 2 threes. I actually thought the bigger issue was just like, it was just defense, or the fact that they were even in that place, the position to begin with. Like, what are you doing messing around with the Hawks? And just look, Kemba has been having issues at the rim. I mean, he hasn't shot great at the rim all season. He's probably a little under 50% there now, but last 3 games for Kemba in the restricted area, 4 of 18, 22%, with 7 of those shots being blocked too. So, it's not great. But anyways, the Hornets, they managed to put this loss behind them pretty quickly, because on the second night of a back-to-back, guess who's coming in town? The last person you want to have come to town, that is Giannis, the Greek Freak, the Milwaukee Bucks, their flame-throwing offense, Chris Middleton, another all-star, Mike Budenholzer, drawing up all kinds of crazy plays. Malcolm Brogdon's going crazy. He hit the game winner against San Antonio back on Saturday. So you've got a rest disadvantage against one of the hottest basketball teams in the world. And, Richie, what happened Monday night in Uptown?
Man, I'm surprised that we came away with that close win. Like you said, we were on a rest disadvantage on a back-to-back Monday night. But the Hornets did bounce back. They won 110-107. They had a slow first quarter. The Bucks came out strong. I feel like they always do that against us. They have these strong first quarters where it feels like we're in this hole. But we didn't give up. We kind of plugged away. Jeremy Lamb led the way for the Hornets with 21 points and 8 rebounds. Kemba also pitched in 21 points. But if you look at the efficiency stats, weren't that great. So, First quarter for the Bucks, like I said, it feels like a broken record with this team. They have a very similar profile to the Hawks in terms of taking a lot of threes, taking a lot of shots at the rim. Giannis is the biggest player in that situation, getting to the rim. And then you surround him with shooters. It makes it very difficult to defend. And in this game, the Bucks took 89% of their field goal attempts from either behind the arc or at the rim. Very difficult to defend. And in the first quarter, the Bucks shot 8 of 11 from deep. It's very difficult to defend when Giannis is getting inside the paint and you're forced to help off. And I've said this time and time again. I know it might not be the best strategy, but this is the strategy that I feel like has to happen with Giannis. You have to play him straight up. Marvin has to play him straight up. MKG, when he's in there at times, I know that he doesn't always kind of matched up with Giannis. He's got to play him straight up and trust that he can defend Giannis to the best of his abilities. I would let Giannis get what he can get and not let Brook Lopez and all these other players go off around him. So I will say that one thing that I noticed, hot first quarter for the Bucks, but in the second quarter, I noticed a little bit more switching, a little bit more frequently. I think that reduces the time that you have to chase and scramble. And I think as a result, I mean, it might not be a direct correlation one-to-one here, but I thought the defense played better from the second quarter on. And the difficulties in defending the three kind of went down after that point. Any initial thoughts about this Bucks game on Monday night?
They're just, with Giannis, they're just so overwhelming at times. And that sort of strategy, that sort of like, not strategy, but that it's a trend for them, not just against the Hornets, but against a lot. I've seen this, I've watched them play probably more than, outside of the Hornets, maybe I've watched the Bucks more than any other team in this league. Like, they're can't take your eyes off Milwaukee and Giannis. They're just that much fun. But like they come out just breathing fire every game. And I just think it's sort of like natural to, after you get out 15 in the first couple of minutes and you hit 80% of your threes, you're like, oh, this is about to be a cakewalk. We're going to hang 150 on them. No big deal. And I mean, Charlotte fought back. The fact that this was a 3-point game at the end of one quarter, when Milwaukee comes out and makes eight of their first 10 3-pointers, literally the first 8 minutes of the game, Brook Lopez plays, Milwaukee scored 1.94 points per possession. That's almost Jesus perfect Christ. Basketball. For the quarter, they scored 1.45 points per possession, 1.46 points per possession, which is also like light your hair on fire and jump out of a window. Like, it's so bad. But, you know, look, the second unit came in, they brought a little bit of life. And that second quarter, like, outscoring Milwaukee 33-17, that's one of the best – that's, like, one of the best 12-minute stretches the Hornets have had all season. And, I mean, they really kept it going early into the third quarter, too. And then, I mean, this was a 25-point game at one point in time for the Hornets. And for me, what I'm thinking – yeah, 25, that was the biggest lead. Milwaukee's biggest lead was 14. I was actually watching this game on Monday with a buddy and a colleague of ours, Hayes Permar, and we're laughing because we're like, dude, if they get this game to 30, like if Charlotte gets up 30 in the third quarter, like Bud's got it. Like they're not gonna like just exhaust Giannis trying to come back from down 30. You know what I mean? With 14, 15 minutes left or whatever. And it got knocked down to 20 instead, and then it got knocked down to 15, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, here comes the bad guy chasing you down from behind. And Charlotte did sort of just enough to hang on. I thought a couple of really nice highlight plays for Miles Bridges in this game. He had two really, really, really nice blocks, including one on Giannis. I think the other was on Malcolm Brogdon. I thought Charlotte did a really good job, especially in the first half when Milwaukee went to Giannis at the five. I mean, that's a lineup that should just kill everybody. And, like, all of those threes that Milwaukee was getting earlier in the game, they were with him just caving in Charlotte's defense. Just, like, he was forcing – I mean, he was forcing help either with the ball, like, posting up, or he would slip or have a rim run, and that would cause someone from the weak side would have to tag down. Boom, you know, someone else is open for a corner, catch and shoot three on the other side of the court with one, you know, one skip pass. And I thought Charlotte did a really, really good job at, you know, when handling those minutes with him at the five, because some of those minutes came with Frank Kaminsky at the five, too. And that sounds like a bad proposition. By the way, welcome back to the rotation, at least for the time being, Frank Kaminsky.
Dude, he went from the 15th man to, like, the 7th man. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. I mean,
because, like, you know, Aridin Gomez, yep. is, you know, his ankle was bothering him, so he missed a couple games. And, I guess Frank has played well enough in the eyes of the coaching staff. And, hey, man, good for him, seriously.
I will say, somewhat impressed with this play. I can't knock it.
No, totally. He's been totally fine. I do think we've talked about this with him plenty of times before. Like, him playing center, like, it was always the move for him. Like, defense was always going to be, like, no matter where this guy plays, if he's on the court, your defense is going to have issues. And, like, he has predictably looked soft and slow on that end, which he always will. But he can shoot, he can pass, like he can breathe a little life into an offense in the half court when he's just standing out there. And, you know, if he's last three games, 4-8 on catch and shoot threes, he's been okay. And it sort of does make me think that you're like, okay, this guy I think has shown enough, honestly, in the last week or so, that I think if Aridin Gomez usurped him and took the role back as the second string center, like, I think at this point now there's like enough good for Frank that he'll, like, even if he's not in Charlotte next season, I think someone else has seen enough, do you know what I mean, to at right. least sort of, like, take a chance on him. Again, the move for him was always to play the five. I mean, this is like a much smaller version of what we've seen with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, which was that, like, these guys have been moved to positions where – and they're playing at them full-time now, where they are just much better suited
yep.
to use their skills. And again, give Frank credit for staying locked in on that. He totally could have bailed. Like, he totally could have bailed on this season. And I honestly wouldn't have even blamed him for it. And give credit to the coaching staff for work, you know, for at least giving him a shot there too. But yeah, so anyways, I'm trying to think if there were any other quick thoughts I had about the Milwaukee game. I also just thought too late when they were coming back.
Tony Parker?
It felt like, well, just real quickly, on the Bucks, it felt like they could have posted up Giannis on every single play. Serious, like when they were coming back, and there were a couple possessions where it was like Bledsoe would dribble for 8 seconds, Giannis wouldn't touch the ball, and then Bledsoe would shoot it. And look, Eric Bledsoe's having an amazing season.
Yeah, he's impressed me.
It happens to be a contract year. I doubt that's a coincidence, but but you never know. But like, on those possessions, I mean, that's free money for the Hornets. Possessions where the Bucks are behind in a comeback mode and Giannis doesn't touch the ball, like, that is a stop already, you know? But it just felt like every possession with that team, when they're playing him at the five, or even when he's at the four, and because Lopez can shoot 30-foot threes now too, like, it feels like you should be able to post him every play. And then he should either, like, get a dunk or a layup, or if the double comes, then it's a 45% chance that dude's going to make a three, you know, that he passes to. So Milwaukee is scary. They're a problem. But this was a great win for Charlotte. And, man, two big buckets in crunch time by Tony Parker too, right?
Exactly. And I know that you know, like you said, if it would have gone up by 30, maybe you would sit him. But they, like you said, they chipped away at the lead, and it started to make me nervous, because anytime it's a close game with the Hornets, those feelings come back as a fan, and those stats come up with those, you know, last possession games. Charlotte doesn't fare too well, but it's crazy to see, like, you know, when Kemba's not having a good game, which I don't feel like he had a good game against Milwaukee. I know you can look at the 21 points, but the fact that he didn't shoot too efficiently from the floor, I don't consider that a good game for Kemba. You've got to turn to someone else, and we've never really had that. You know, Lamb is someone that, you know, is one of the few players on this team, if not the only player on this team, that can create a shot for himself to get a bucket. But Tony Parker just seems to step up when it matters. And he's done this a couple times this year, but especially in this game in the fourth quarter, where he had 6 points, all of them coming in the final 5 minutes. I do think, you know, you're probably the biggest hater of this, but he is very reliant on the mid-range pull-up.
And he loves it.
If that's clicking, then clearly he's becoming more effective, and that's where he's going to get a lot of his points, other than maybe his floaters and his inside game. But if his mid-range game is clicking, I feel like he's going to be a more effective player. and that's what happened late in the game. Kemba turned to Parker. Parker made a couple clutch shots, and the Hornets on a back-to-back beat the Bucks 110-107. Very surprising. Oh, and also, last thing before we transition, MKG returned. Had a very good game.
He was huge.
Yeah. Best plus-minus at plus 18, which I know is not the best stat. And I looked it up. Again, the matchups, you know, you always say there's a lot of noise with that. You don't really know exactly how they calculate all that stuff, and I'm not sure how they do it either. But players matched up, or that were matched up against him, were 0 for 8, and MKG kind of shut those players down. He doesn't – it's funny. You would think that he would be matched up against Giannis a lot, but that's not where the majority of his come. I think it becomes against Middleton, I believe, if you were to look at the percentages. But he still does at times guard Giannis. And I'm okay with either him or Marvin guarding Giannis. And like I said, guard him straight up. Even if you post him up, don't help off. Just let him get his, and don't let the other shooters get hot. Because the other shooters get hot, then everything gets easier for Giannis as well. So let's transition to the win.
Just one thing real quickly too, which was Milwaukee took 46 threes in this game. Hornets did get a little lucky too, because the Bucks, 27 of those 46 threes were wide open 3-point attempts. They went just 10 to 27 on those, 37%. Wow. But literally 30% of their field goal attempts in this game were wide open threes. And I mean, 37%, like, that's okay, not great. For the season, the Hornets are allowing 17.2 wide open 3-point attempts per game. So the Bucks got literally 10 more than that, which is pretty crazy. But we'll just like to throw out too, like, the Michael Kidd-Gilchrist came in, and his energy, his hustle, he changed the vibe of the game, like, just like that, like, just in an instant. And he's done that the entire season. Just once again, look, I tend to sort of think sometimes that grit, hustle, blah, 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 like we like to glorify and overrate that. Maybe not on this podcast, but just sort of like American sports media in general. But with him, like, it's no BS. Like, the dude plays hard as hell, and I think it's infectious. And you can't – I think there were a couple of those games that he missed where if he had played – they're not going to get, if he plays in that Atlanta game last Sunday, the Hornets just don't get suckered like that. Like, he comes in off the bench, and if things are going bad midway through the first quarter or late in the first quarter, like, that dude comes in and just the tone of the game shifts. And I want to go out of the way and praise him, because he's done that literally every night this season, and it's cool as hell to watch.
To me, he's been the second best player this season, just in terms of his impact on this Hornets team. And and I think you might have mentioned this, but like, when he comes out on the court, it's very infectious. The way that he plays, when he steps up his game, others around him feel like they have to as well. But yeah, he returned against this Bucks game and also played against the Hawks on Wednesday. The Hornets pick up some revenge in a 108-94 victory over the Hawks on Wednesday after losing to them on Sunday. Charlotte got 22 points from Lamb, which seems to be he's on a hot streak, I feel like. I feel like the past five games he's been doing very well. 19 from Cody Zeller. 19 from Cody Zeller. Who knew he had that in him? And then it had another spark off the bench from Kaminsky in the first half. The Hornets outscore the Hawks from the free throw line 28-19. And absolutely dominate in the paint, tallying 62 points in the paint, which is crazy. But this game started off a little sloppy, a little crummy, like you would say. Cody, for example, just kind of watching this game, as a whole, he had a great game. But if you were to look at his first quarter performance and the Hornets as a whole, I thought they were sloppy. There was four turnovers. He had two of them. I kind of texted you this. I feel like he struggles sometimes to make passes off the bounce. He doesn't ever look for a shot, he does occasionally, but not as often as you would like him to. So it seems like he's dribbling side to side a lot with those DHOs and things like that. He's got to do a better job of grabbing that ball off the bounce and making that firm pass across the court. Like I said, especially if opponents aren't respecting his shot. And I feel like a couple times this game, it just seems like he had some lazy, sloppy passes. There's one pass I feel like it just kind of slipped out of his hands. It was it was so weak, so weak. But, you know, after the first quarter, not just him, but all the other players stepped up. It wasn't the most exciting game. The offense wasn't the greatest. But we played a whole lot better in quarters 2, 3, and 4. And like I said, points in the paint. There was only 10 points in the paint. You know, 10's all right. I mean, it's not the best. It's all right in the first quarter. But there were 52 points in the paint in quarters 2, 3, and 4. That's an amazing stat to me, how easy it was for the Hornets to get inside the paint. They weren't the most efficient, but they got there a lot.
Yeah, they took a ton of shots inside the paint last night, and I'll pull these up as soon as I get a chance to. But as I said, in the first two games, Atlanta had 71 field goal attempts at the rim, and that was way down last night against the Hornets. You brought up Jeremy Lamb. Let's just give him a quick shout here. Last dozen games for Jeremy Lamb, usage rate of at least 20% in 75% of those games, averaging 18 points per game on 48, 39, 90 slash shooting, 6.3 rebounds, 2.1 assists. In that same stretch, Jeremy Lamb, 44% on catch and shoot threes, 24% of his field goal attempts have been three-pointers after a touch time of 2 or fewer seconds. So playing quick, you know, getting up shots from this is what you want from a second side guy like Jay Lamb. 39, and he's shot 46% on those quick threes. 39% of his field goal attempts have been two-pointers outside the restricted area. So that's sort of like vintage Lamb, you know. I mean, he's done an okay job getting to the rim, but he still loves his floaters. He still loves his mid-range game, but shooting 47% on those. Like, that shot's okay if you're going to hit between 45 and 50%. I mean, obviously over 50, that's great too. But, I mean, Jeremy Lamb's been hot recently. I'm trying to think if there were anything else I wanted to sort of, like, pull up about this game that I thought was pretty impressive. Just, like, the way, again, the bench did a phenomenal job for Charlotte. The Hornets came out, man, they look sluggish. Like, a lot of standing around offensively. Kemba goes 1 of 7 shooting in the first quarter. They're -8 with Marvin Williams on the court. Nick Batum in 7 minutes, he takes no field goal attempts. Marvin 0 for 1 in the first quarter. Like you said, Zeller, those 2 turnovers, he was only 1 for 3 shooting. And then, man, the second unit came in, Malik Monk, Frank Kaminsky, Miles Bridges, and I thought they were just like a shot in the arm for the Hornets and something that they badly needed. They added a little life, a little verve to the offense. And, I mean, it still took the Hornets a while to put. It wasn't really until, later in the game that they sort of put Atlanta away. But it really started the last few minutes of the first quarter with those dudes on the court.
Yep. And I think Kaminsky had a nice little run there at the end of the first quarter into the second quarter. All of his 8 points came in the first half. In Kaminsky fashion, I feel like he has these ups and downs, ebbs and flows throughout the season, but he just had this little flash here in the early second quarter where he did a good job of scoring from behind the arc. And really, in the second half, he was really not much of a factor. But Cody Zeller's performance, like you said, 12 of his 19 points. He didn't miss a single shot in the second quarter, 5 for 5. Finished the game with 19 points, but again, like I said, 12 points of those came in the second quarter. And a lot of those actions came off those fake DHOs. It's almost like they were surprised that they helped off of him to kind of focus on whoever he was working the DHO with. And then he was just surprised that there was this open lane and he was able to get all the way to the basket with that side-to-side action. Mm-hmm. A couple things I thought were a little bit kind of the only glaring negative that I saw, Hawks offensive rebounds. They had 16 offensive rebounds, which is just way too many. I think that was the most glaring negative. But again, they also turned the ball over a lot. So it's almost like that made up for the fact these extra possessions that they got with the offensive rebounds, they kind of turned the ball over. So it kind of evened out in that sense. And I don't know exactly what maybe caused those offensive rebounds. I feel like that might be somewhat of an issue this year. If we do switch more often, is that something that you can expect, Brian? Like, if you switch more often, maybe there might be an opportunity for bigger guys to maybe grab more offensive rebounds, or is it just...
I guess so. I just think for this team, they just don't have a lot of good great rebounds. There's no... I mean, say what you want about Dwight, but, you know, you could at least, you know, that guy's maybe at the detriment of his own team sometime a season ago. But, we saw in the preseason, we were like, this team's probably going to struggle defensively or on the glass because They don't have a dude that's a magnet for rebounds. It's got to be a by committee thing. I mean, you know, sometimes you need Marvin, like he did in Atlanta the other day, to grab 13 rebounds, you know. And obviously when MKG comes in, he helps, and Bridges, those guys try on the glass and stuff. But there's just – I just think that's going to be an issue for them all season. And yeah, I think there are – I think sometimes it can almost cut both ways, because it's like, you know, you might be playing a team that switches a lot. And like there may be cross matchups. So like, a player X from the Hawks will switch on to Kemba, like a big dude. And then when the ball, when the ball goes down the other way in transition or whatever, Kemba's matched up with John Collins, you know? And like all of a sudden, you know, sometimes I think, and I mean, that's something you've seen Giannis take advantage of this season, is when Giannis gets those cross matches, he'll go right to the block, and they'll like the Clippers used to do with Blake Griffin, and they'll just try to get it to him on the head and create an advantage, whatever. Would like to get this in there real quickly to the Hornets. And this is according to Cleaning Glass, so this is without the last 2 minutes of garbage time from last night. The Hornets go 24 of 42 at the rim. Percentage-wise, it's not great, about 57%. But the 42 shots, that's an avalanche. I mean, it's 54% of the shots the Hornets took last night. It's a great number for a team like Charlotte that really doesn't get to the rim at like an exceptional rate. The Hawks take just 28 shots at the rim, which is a significant drop. First two games against the Hornets, they average over 35 per game at the rim. They only make 13 of those shots, so just 46%. So just like the Hornets' rim defense was outstanding last night, against the team that I know the Hawks aren't. They don't have a surplus of talent, ready-made talent at the outset, but like they're targeting the rim, and Charlotte did a good job last night making that less available to them. And there was one other thing I was going to say here about this. I've lost it here. So yeah, anyways, I just thought Charlotte, the other thing was on those DHOs, the fake ones, Cody got a dunk out of it. Miles Bridges got a shot at the rim off of it too. I thought that was a nice adjustment, as Charlotte, they're working against the young, aggressive defense that's switching a lot. That fake DHO is a perfect way to counter some of that. It's like slipping a screen, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can catch teams that aren't ready for it, and aren't, rotating and switching on a string. And so I thought that was they got a couple good looks at the rim off that kind of action.
And I was just thinking of this as you were talking about, my question to you as to why maybe the offensive rebounds were coming. Maybe the cause for that was switching. But kind of looking back on that game, like you said, they didn't take a lot of shots at the rim. And, the Hawks are more than happy to shoot a lot of threes. So with long shots also come long rebounds. So maybe that might have played a factor as well. Let's transition to something, kind of wrap up this episode. Talk about Bradley Beal. I know that Spencer Percy, our third co-host, had a tweet not too long ago about Charlotte being aggressive in these discussions, which, the Wizards are open to kind of having this like fire sale. Okay, you can have Beal, you can have Wall, you can have Otto Porter. What do you think, if you were to put a percentage on it, with Charlotte specifically, thoughts on the likelihood that, just a percentage, quick rapid fire, that anything gets done between the Hornets and the Wizards?
What, low. Unfortunately, I would say, 5-10% max. Yep. It seems unlikely. It might even be hard to trade Brad Beal out of there, even if you had a treasure chest of assets to offer them in return. He's a really good player entering the prime of his career, and he's under his contract for two more seasons after this one, at a rate that's not insane, like basically being paid the same amount that Nick Batum is, literally almost through the exact same number of years too.
And they're just as good, right? They're just as good.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how that works. That would be, I think, low. Yeah. I mean, Spencer's source was credible, and we saw it corroborated elsewhere too. Like, those two franchises have clearly engaged in some form of talks, whether they were just sort of like exploratory or not. So that means there's at least a non-zero chance, right?
Right.
If we're at least at that level, but it just still seems really unlikely. It's tough to think of a great package the Hornets offer in terms of a draft pick that might not be really that good this year, you know, because the team is gunning for a playoff spot. They're not, probably not going to be in the lottery, especially if they had Bradley Beal.
Right, especially if you get the Beal. Yeah.
Totally. And, you know, look, I'm not sure what the league-wide perception is of Malik Monk. Certainly not without talent, but, you know, been a little up and down, not a great defender, streaky shooter. You know, how does he even fit inside the lot? You know, once you have Malik Monk, then what? You know, like what do you have? Especially if he's around a locker room that's a little toxic at the moment too. Just the salary to match. You know, if it were Marvin or if it were Nick Batum, there's just so much long term money with Nick. I just can't imagine a scenario that Washington, unless they are just so desperate to move Beal, which I don't know why you would, because he's so good. And they really, there were no other, you know, the Lakers said, you know, hell, we're not going to trade for this guy because we want to make sure we have cap space to try to sign Durant this summer. Or if there were any of these other players that may be in the running for Beal sort of exited the race and Washington was just desperate to get something, maybe. But I think 10% at the absolute most. I think probably closer to like 5%, though. You know,
right?
Like I just don't know why Washington would make that move outside of just like they're tired of complacency and just they're sort of panicking. Like I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they maybe made those players available, like you said, maybe in a panic move. But you know, sitting back thinking on it, what's the advantage in trading Beal for someone like Batum, who has the same length on the contract, so you're not getting off any
money.
Years or money there. And I feel like if that's the way they wanted to go, they're trying to get young talent or they're trying to get off money and acquire draft picks. And so the initial package that I had, well, first off, 5% is what, 5 to 10% is what, exactly what I wrote down in my notes here. That's exactly kind of how I feel it's going to be. It's very low. I think their asking price will be steep for Beal compared to maybe Wall or Otto Porter. I don't think the Hornets are going to do anything rash, especially maybe how they're playing recently. I feel like maybe there's some promise behind that. But the initial package that I had, I guess I just wanted to make it the cleanest trade ever, was with match it with Batum and then throw in a couple draft picks and add Monk, thinking that Monk would be enticing and the draft picks would be enticing. But if they're trading Beal, they probably want to get off some long-term money and they don't want Batum. So I think that's like a double-edged sword there. So it's tough seeing him do that kind of trade. But then if you give them expirings like Marvin Williams and Jeremy Lamb, you know, Marvin Williams got 2 more years, but Jeremy Lamb. And then I think the Hornets maybe would only be willing to give up one first-round pick. So if they're trying to get young talent, they're not going to get that with Marvin Williams or Jeremy Lamb, who might not be with the team next year. So it's a very tough proposition, because I don't know if the Hornets have the best package that they can offer to the Wizards here. And I'm not really sure exactly what the Wizards want, but I would think young talent and get off some money.
Yeah.
Because their situation in the salary is not too hot.
I don't even know like what Washington's trying to do at the moment, honestly. Seriously. Like, are they trying to like rush back into the playoffs? Are they trying to trade these guys? Like, they're not out of the playoff race by any stretch.
No.
Like, in the Eastern Conference, they are right there, and Lord knows they have plenty of talent. Yeah, they're 8-13. They're like a game or two out of eighth place behind freaking Orlando. Like, yeah, I'm pretty sure if you wanted to, you could catch them. I think if any of those guys get – any of their big three get moved this year, you know, Porter sort of makes the most sense. Because I could even – look, the other thing too is you can't trade John Wall this year. His trade kicker is way too big. Like, it would be basically an extra $20 million attached on to John Wall. So, like, that's not happening this year. And then starting next year, his salary bumps up to like, I think $37 million. So like all of a sudden, like there are all kind of challenges there too. If they want to like burn it down and try to like build around Brad Beal, like it's just going to be hard to move those other two guys, but I can certainly see the appeal in wanting to do that. But as far as like, again, I don't know if they're trying to blow it up this season. I don't know if they're trying to trade one of these guys and get picks and, you know, whatever, like it. I'm not sure what even their end game is. I just know they're a mess right now. That said, like, again, you don't want to, like, let your mind think about this too much, because the reality of it is so unlikely it's going to happen. But Kemba and Brad Beal would be an amazing backcourt together. Like, those guys fit. I mean, Beal fits with anybody because, like, you know, he's a two-guard that can bang threes off the catch and run pick and roll and blah, blah, blah. But, like, he and Kemba would be – I mean, that's – I don't know if it fits like a glove, but it's close, you know? But it just doesn't seem – you know, and yeah, and I mean, like, shoot, having those two guys to close out a game, I mean, it would be amazing for the Hornets, but I just can't, especially with Cody out there flying around setting screens for both those dudes. But yeah, I don't think it's in the cards, unfortunately, for the Hornets.
Yeah, as Hornets fans, we probably shouldn't get our hopes up for that trade. I know that it's very enticing to think about Beal on this team, and
yeah.
When I think back to that draft, I know the MKG's had a great season this season. I was always a bigger proponent of Bradley Beal, but that might
Gators.
Be my, that might yeah that might be my ties to the Gators. Yeah. But I always thought he was a better pick. So anyway, go ahead. Last thought
before, but yeah, real quickly here. Just kind of, we should have done this at the start, but I just want to run this down real quickly. Hornets fifth in the NBA in offensive efficiency, over 113 points per 100 possessions. They're actually number 10 in defense, if you can actually believe that. They're tied with Miami, 107.9 points per 100 possessions, net rating of plus 5.4. That's sixth in the NBA, a record of only 11-10, but with a point differential of a 14-win team. So in terms of expected win differential, they actually have the worst in the NBA of -3. They're currently tied with Boston for sixth in the Eastern Conference. And one last note, too. The starting five of Kemba Walker, Nick Batum, Marvin Williams, Jeremy Lamb, Cody Zeller, 284 minutes for that lineup this season. That's most in the NBA by almost 30 minutes. 112 points per 100, 55% effective shooting, 106 points per 100 possessions on defense, a net of plus six. Pretty good altogether work from, like, lots of work. They've been healthy. They've been playing pretty well, the starting five, that is, this year.
Very good. Very good stuff. I think that, you know, it's a common theme this season in terms of, you know, clutch offense and kind of getting things done late. You know, we're like Brian said, we're last when it comes to the win-loss differential. We should be better than we are based off of our net rating, but we're not. By the time you're listening to this episode, it's going to be Friday, so we play Utah tonight. Brian made a point of this, how teams shoot a lot of wide open shots. Well, the Utah Jazz get up a lot of wide open shots, but they
making them right now.
but they're not making them. So maybe we can be in for another game where we get a little bit lucky. That's clearly why they traded for Kyle Korver, to kind of improve their shooting a little bit. And their defense has been worse than they probably expected it. Gobert hasn't been the best. I think they're like 13th maybe in the NBA, but.
Weird.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode. We really do appreciate you all and you guys. It definitely keeps us going. We do have some interesting updates on the horizon, but we will hold off on that for another time. Please check our Twitter handle at BuzzBeatPod, as we are doing a giveaway for the 30th anniversary team t-shirt. I received this t-shirt against the 76ers, where Kemba dropped 60. The details will be in the tweet, but basically the gist of it is, when we put out the tweet tomorrow for episode 80, all you have to do is reply with a screenshot of you listening to the episode at any point on your device, and just reply, and you'll be entered into the giveaway. So it's a pretty cool shirt. It has the 30th anniversary team, and there's 10 players on there. Jared Wallace from the Bobcats, the only Bobcat on the t-shirt, so it looks a little bit out of place, but still a cool t-shirt nonetheless. Until next time, this was episode 80. That's Brian. I am Richie. Go Hornets.